The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We welcome you back. It has been a busy show already. A lot of reaction to this LSU story. And I know we're focusing primarily on Les Miles. There's a lot more to it. It just so happens that the revelation today that the school was close to firing him in 2013, but the board would not go along with it, has certainly been the headline. But it is unclear where this story goes from next. The Department of Education will continue its Title IX investigation. So, for those of you who are late to the show, I understand. It's 5 o'clock somewhere. It's 5 o'clock on the East Coast, and many of you may not have heard the earlier conversation. Let's recap some of what has been said. Kenny Jacoby, who's part of the team from USA Today, joined us early, and we asked him how involved were the Board of Supervisors.
These allegations against his students. And that's what a lot of the students I've been speaking to today have said too, is, you know, these people have known about these issues for a long time and nothing has been done about it until now, and until it appeared in a national newspaper.
And exactly, we asked Kenny, what were the accusations against Les Miles?
Les Miles was accused of sexually harassing at least two, if not three or more, student workers who worked in the athletic department. He essentially wanted a role in personally interviewing them and selecting who would be picked. And he, what we learned today is he had a preference toward blonde women with large breasts who were, you know, particularly attractive. He wanted this as a way of sort of selling it to potential recruits, selling the school. As far as the sexual harassment, what we learned is that he, you know, when he hired these young women, he sometimes offered them to help their careers later down the line after they graduated, and then kind of turned that into a more personal relationship with them. And then ultimately, one of the women said he kissed her alone when he was driving her in his car. One of the other students that was mentioned in this report today said that she had a very traumatic experience when she was alone in a room with him, and alleged some sort of unwanted touching, and this had such a profound impact on her that she basically up and left.
We also asked Kenny Jacoby about Joe Oliva wanting to fire Les Miles after the allegations, but did not. Why?
The athletic director found his conduct so disturbing back in 2013 that he said he thought they could fire him over it with cause. But instead, they essentially swept the thing under the rug, didn't tell the public about it, gave him a private letter of reprimand and made him attend counseling, but then kept him around for another 3 years until he started losing games. So, I mean, if that doesn't tell you who really, you know, has the power and the influence at that university, then it's hard to say what does.
And finally, we asked him how pervasive are the problems.
These problems at LSU were pervasive and not just limited to, you know, members of the football team or athletic department. There was a neglect for providing the proper and appropriate resources to be able to handle sexual assault and domestic violence complaints appropriately. There was severe understaffing, but when they did even, you know, process complaints, often they would result in basically slaps on the wrist. You know, students who'd been found responsible for rape being allowed to stay on campus under probation.
So that's a a sample of what we learned today. Now, you know, we haven't had a lot of conversation about this because we've been bouncing around between guests, but I would like some thoughts, you know, about the obvious covering up of these transgressions. And I will be the first one to admit that you do have to balance a lot of things when you're running an athletic department. And rightly or wrongly, and in this case I would say it's wrongly, you end up caving into the pressures of the one loss record. We've seen social media pick football coaches. In this case, Les Miles was the highest paid, most popular figure on that campus. And the fact that the university signed off on sending him a scarlet letter and as opposed to bouncing him out of there. And what was the damage as a result? We all know later came very serious allegations, the cultural allegations against the school. If Miles had been fired then, and he should have been, would that have helped the culture of the university? Would it have changed anything? And really, maybe the bigger question, do fans care? Do you really care what the culture of your university is as long as you're winning? And Les Miles was winning. By 2013, he had already won the national championship in 2007, played for it again in 11, started 12 as the number one team in the country. And it was really about this time when the program started to seesaw a little bit. And ultimately, he was fired four games into 2016. But, you know, remember, Joe Oliva wanted to fire him at the end of the 2015 season. But what happened? Remember that Saturday night against Texas A&M? Crowd started cheering. The university president got behind him, and then Joe Oliva had to back down. I mean, I've always thought Joe Oliva was fairly squirrely as the AD down there, but he had some good intentions. He just didn't, you know, what would you have done in Joe Oliva's situation? You have cause to fire your head coach because of clearly inappropriate action. We're not accusing him of anything criminal. We're just accusing him of inappropriate activity, which I don't think anyone is denying. What do you do if you're in there? Ever been in that spot where, well, I like my job. I'm paid millions of dollars a year. I'm going to go along to get along. Finally, Oliva got bounced a couple of years ago. And the university is in much better hands now, but Oliva was there a very long time. Let's get some phone calls in here. And check out Lee in Oklahoma City. How are you, Lee? Lee, are you there? Either he can't hear me or I can't hear him, but we'll try. Mike is in Louisiana. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Paul, can you hear me?
I can. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hey, great. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to talk about this LSU situation a second. I'm from Baton Rouge. I'm an LSU fan. I'm an LSU alumnus. And I just think it's sad. I think that it went on way too long. I think Les Miles thought a lot of himself and just really didn't consider the ramifications of everything he was doing. And I think you touched on it. I think possibly it set the culture on the wrong path. And I think a lot of people really wish Les Miles would have been gone well before he was. And I just think it's sad that these poor women had to endure this. And there's a lot of good people at LSU. It's going to be easy for folks to pile on. But I really think it was just a handful of people that were turning a blind eye to it.
Yeah, and Mike, we saw it in vivid color a couple of years later when, you know, Les should have been run out of there at the end of the 15 season, but we live so much in the moment. You know, we're so much prisoners of whatever happened yesterday. And I remember that game, and Les is, you know, remember the story, Jimbo Fisher's coming in, Les is about to get fired. He wins the game, and Joe Oliva has to go down there and tell him after the game, we want you to stay.
Yeah, that's a shame. And I know so many of us thought and felt like that was our opportunity to say goodbye to Les. And but you know, somehow it, you know, just kind of passed us by. But it's sad that we have to deal with this today. And it really, I mean, honestly, I don't think it should have ever happened. And it happened under Miles's watch. I think most folks feel good about Coach O. Obviously, I don't have the inside track on what's going on there now. But we do feel, and you know, I know Scott Woodward. He's a great guy. I've known him a long time, and everybody has.
Yeah, you know, I would be. I'll say this to you, Mac. I would be far more disturbed if Scott Woodward was not in charge. I think Scott Woodward is a superb athletic director, and he understands Baton Rouge, and you know what I mean by that. I mean, he's from there, and I think you have to understand. Yep. You can't parachute in from Duke. And by the way, we should have known about Joe Oliva. I mean, he bungled the lacrosse situation there badly. And yeah, for the life of me, I've never understood how he got the job.
Well, we don't either, but we're super excited to have Scott. He's a perfect fit being back home. We love Scott. And I do think that he's always going to have, you know, the university's best interest in mind, and that's good or bad.
I totally agree. And I think, thanks for the call, Woodward, you know, has an impeccable reputation, and there's a lot going on at LSU. This isn't the only story. This is the one getting the headlines today. Lee, I think we have Lee back. Let me try him in OKC. Hey, Lee.
Hey, Paul. Can you hear me now, sir?
Yeah, I sure can. Thank you for the call.
Oh, good. Oh, no, thank you for taking my call. My question is this, and it has to do with everything that's coming out with Les Miles. It's horrible. The thing is, it's the same administration that was there, that's been there. And I was wondering, did this have any effect? Did they do it the same type of thing with Will Wade? And is the investigation of Will Wade over with? Is that still on?
I think in Will Wade's case, Oliva probably had the right idea. I think the Will Wade situation is a game of legal gymnastics. And, yeah. I think once they were able to go in there and renegotiate his contract, where he can be fired for cause more easily, they're just waiting the outcome of that investigation, which is, it's still not there.
But the thing I'm worried about is what kind of light is this going to put on LSU then, based on now with this, with Les Miles?
I hear you. Yeah, and it's not a great look, but they're stuck with it. And Woodward inherited it, and yeah, the real issue here is there's not much appetite in college athletics to do the right thing. We all say that, but it is such a big business, and you know, this is a classic case of that. But I mean, and this isn't the only place. I think LSU's in the spotlight today, but by no means are they alone.
Oh, no, but he who has not committed sin cast the first stone. And I'll tell you, there's
athletics that hasn't. And by the way, I don't want to come off here, you know, I'm on some moral crusade. It's not like I'm not part of it, okay? I mean, I swim in these same waters that everyone else does. And, we tend to be outraged when something like this happens. But most important, we want to know who won the game.
That is the bottom line.
It's the
winners are the ones who win and who make the money.
You know, I think Donald Trump said once, you know, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and get away with it, and at the time he was probably right. I think there are people in intercollegiate athletics who could do almost anything and get away with it.
Unfortunately, you're absolutely correct. I completely agree with you.
It's just, you know, what I'm particularly interested in is what's going to happen at Kansas? Are you going to put up with this guy after learning what we have all learned. And I also say this, my feelings about this issue, and it sounds like yours would be similar, are no different in 2021 than they were in 2013. But society has a much narrower view.
Well, I don't see how Kansas is going to be able to keep him as coach after delegations have come out.
I would fire Les Miles by dusk today. I wouldn't waste another minute.
Neither would I. You're absolutely correct.
Thank you very much for the call. I really, really appreciate it. It's just, they have to just be humiliated. They did no due diligence. Jeff Long made a fool out of himself when he introduced Les Miles. It was a clown hire from the beginning. But again, that's on him. And you don't want to have to admit a mistake. But sometimes you can bury mistakes. You can't bury this one now. It's out in the open. We'll take a break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Back to your calls in a moment at 855-242-7285. Again, we're talking about this Les Miles situation, whether this should carry with him to Kansas. Let me go over this one more time. What exactly, we asked this to Kenny Jacoby from USA Today, who broke the story. What exactly were the accusations against Les Miles?
Les Miles was accused of sexually harassing at least two, if not three or more, student workers who worked in the athletic department. He essentially wanted a role in personally interviewing them and selecting who would be picked. And what we learned today is he had a preference toward blonde women with large breasts who were, particularly attractive. He wanted this as a way of sort of selling it to potential recruits, selling the school. As far as the sexual harassment, what we learned is that he, when he hired these young women, he sometimes offered them to help their careers later down the line after they graduated, and then kind of turned that into a more personal relationship with them. And then ultimately, one of the women said he kissed her alone when he was driving her in his car. One of the other students that was mentioned in this report today said that she had a very traumatic experience when she was alone in a room with him and alleged some sort of unwanted touching. And this had such a profound impact on her that she basically up and left.
Let's get your reaction to all that. And David is up next. David, good afternoon. Thanks for the call.
Hey,
Paul. Thanks for taking my call. Listen, I've been reading you since the early 80s and listening to you since you first went on the radio here in Birmingham.
Thank you so much.
There's so much I'd like to say, but it does seem interesting that we lament that big-time college athletics is more, has gotten too businesslike, and yet we're praising the current athletics leadership at LSU. Maybe I'm a dinosaur, but there's a lot of us that wonder why Will Wade still has a job. I mean, it seems to me, and I'm speaking to...
You still there, David? For some reason, I've lost communication with you, but... What's up? Okay, we'll see if let me get back to that for a second while we see if David is still there. I'll try to explain why Will Wade still has a job, and it's not easy. 2 years ago, around this time, the allegations came out about him from the New York federal case. The school suspended him. He was not cooperative with the investigation. Team was, remember, LSU had a very good basketball team. They were heading to the tournament. He was suspended before the, I believe it was right before the SEC tournament. Now, ultimately, they, you know, some of these allegations from the New York case about what he was caught on wiretap were never completely corroborated. Will Wade was never asked to testify, and I don't think the tape was ever played. And he went back to he got a new attorney. The new attorney went back to the school, offered to redo the contract, which would give the school a much easier path to fire him. They agreed to it. Was it self-serving? Was it because it was going to cost much less money? Draw your own conclusions, of course. And so they made a deal with him. And I think there was at least the theory at LSU that the case eventually would be adjudicated, and they would know one way or the other. That was 2 years ago. It's still going on. On the other side of the ledger, he has continued to recruit at an extremely high level. Remember, he came into Alabama, beat Alabama on the number one player in the state. He has signed other big-time blue-chip players and ultimately has put a very competitive team on the court. Now, you're asking, well, why should that matter? Answer my question. I don't think I need to answer it. So here's LSU primed again for the NCAA basketball tournament, and Will Wade still has a job. So that, and you have a new athletic director. And I remember talking to Scott Woodward about this after he got the job. He said, "Listen, we made a new deal with the coach, and there's nothing more to say." And I think you have to interpret that the school was waiting for the other shoe to drop. The other shoe has not dropped, and. You know, would he still be the coach, I ask you, if LSU was terrible? Would he still be the coach if LSU was 3-18 this year? No. But not to state the obvious. I mean, we are talking about a billion-dollar industry here where winning matters. And you can argue if you represent Will Wade, nothing has been proven. Just like Les Miles' attorney obviously made that argument. Even though, I mean, let's give Joe Oliva some credit, though. I mean, he did recommend firing him, and the university did not go along. But as far as Will Wade, that's why he has a job. We are going to continue more of your phone calls here at 855-242-7285. We're also going to visit with Andrew Monaco coming up next as we continue talking to some of the great voices of the SEC. He will join us next from College Station. With no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts and an app that lets you bank anytime, anywhere, choosing Capital One is like the easiest decision in the history of decisions. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Capital One N.A. Member FDIC.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We welcome you back Friday afternoon. Brooks Cabina will join us in an hour with the latest on the LSU investigation. Right now, we are delighted to welcome in Andrew Monaco, who a couple years ago was named the voice of the Texas A&M Aggies. He spent a lot of his career doing the NBA games, both in San Antonio and Orlando. And Andrew, thank you for the time. It's great to catch up with you. How are you?
I'm doing great, Paul. Thank you so much for having me.
We are delighted, and I want to talk a little bit more bigger picture, but I have to ask you, as a play-by-play broadcaster, this has been quite a year. Football was fantastic. Basketball has been quite unusual too, because I lost track of how long it had been from the time the Aggies last played to playing the other night.
It was different. You got to see the ascent of football, right? Jimbo Fisher and his third season here, culminating with the Orange Bowl win, and you know you're anticipating the second season for Buzz Williams and this basketball program after they finished and they were ascending going into the SEC tournament, and it all came to a close, and then there's another pause after being off for a month. A great return to the court, a gutsy win by Mississippi State, that's for sure, but as Buzz said after that game, proud of his guys because they left everything on that floor. What was nice is they were excited to be back together. They were excited to be playing their craft, if they will. And, Paul, as you know, you only get so many times together on the floor if it's basketball with one another. And the one thing I've always liked about this team and under Buzz Williams, you can see the joy for one another, and you got a chance to see that and appreciate what was taken away as they were back at Reed Arena on Wednesday.
And Andrew, we spend so much time talking about what the players have encountered, but you know, you've been able to get a good view of this last year, and we are knocking on the door of the year anniversary a week from now of when the whole sports world has shut down. What's it been like from your perch?
You know, Paul, you mentioned the NBA. It reminded me of two things. It reminded me of the lockouts in the NBA and the not knowing if or when we were going to restart. I had one in Orlando and one in San Antonio. But Paul also reminded me of 9/11. And I remember having a game on the 15th working for Old Sunshine Network in Florida. I was supposed to do a women's soccer game in Connecticut on the 15th of September. And honestly, it was the first time I had no desire to go do a game. Normally, I love game days. I love stadiums and I love TV and radio. And that was different. That was shocking. And the pause because of the severity and the magnitude of a virus hitting and realizing that all sports was being shut down and then society being shut down. So it kind of reminded me of those. And then, you know what? Now we have to, you know, we've used the word adjust and adapt and pivot. And we were able to do that over the course of the year. But I give a ton of credit to the leadership here at Texas A&M, to the SEC going forward with football. And Paul, I'm honest about this. I'm thrilled for all the student athletes that they get a chance to play. I know it's different. We don't have the same number of fans, some in front of no fans, but I'm glad for them that they get a chance to come to school for the student part, adapting there, but also the athletic part, that they get to play their sport that they do so well. And they're back doing that this year after the pause.
Yeah, I know because you're so close to the university, but I think a lot of us who you know view it from a little higher altitude have had to realize the most obvious thing of intercollegiate athletics, that the student athletes do matter, and I think we do. You know, we're so caught up, Andrew, with who won the game that you forget the challenges and the ordeals that the young people go through.
you know, interesting. We would have some Zoom meetings with whether it was donors, and you try to stay connected with our 12th Man Foundation. Normally we get together in the summer, and the student athletes are a part of that, talking with them. And I mean, I go back to the funny tweet that ended up being reality when Buddy Johnson tweeted to Jimbo, I guess we're going to have to do spring football online, which ended up being true, right? But you would hear the athletes, the student athletes, say to one another, it's great that we can get together on Zoom, but then sometimes you get off Zoom and you realize, wow, I miss being around them. And Paul, a lot of this year with the student athletes is they come together, and again, it's the social distance there, the locker rooms, if they're in there, are distant. I know Buzz didn't even use the locker room. They're all spaced out on the practice court. But you play your game and you go home alone. You win a game, you're isolated. You lose a game, you're isolated. And that camaraderie has kind of been missed this year. And Paul, you know, getting around former athletes, when they get together and talk, it's not always about the games. A lot of times it's about this practice, what we did on this night together, you know, the way they joke with one another. I feel sorry because that's been taken, that part of it's taken away, but I'm thrilled that they do have that competition. Now, throughout football Saturdays, they are there. I know volleyball and soccer are being split, but good for them to have a fall and a spring season. And I'm here at Bluebell Park here before our baseball game. I'm thrilled to see BP, and I'm thrilled to see, even though they're spaced out, it's really nice to be playing in front of fans.
I want to ask you about baseball for a second because it's so remarkable to watch this league in baseball. And I know how important it is out there with that facility, but I know you've covered a lot of sports in your career, but did you ever dream you would be broadcasting games in a league where it is this important?
Paul, I joke about the if you look at the standings and the rankings and whomever you look at, it's like a stock car race. You have SEC teams passing one another for the lead. It was Florida, then Ole Miss, and now it's Arkansas, and they're kind of drafting one.
Yeah, three weeks, three number ones.
Isn't that amazing? It's and in some of those, you have four SEC teams, 1, 2, 3, and 4. It's fantastic. I had the good fortune early in my career to do minor league baseball. I was in the Southern League. And to be here, you talk about the importance. The other thing that really gets me, Paul, is when I was still in San Antonio, my son, who graduated from Texas A&M, he knew that I would be in the studio that night or I would be away, and he would send me pictures from Bluebell Park saying, don't you wish you were here? So it was justice. While he had his job after graduating, I came out here, took a picture of myself here at Olsen Field, sent it to him, said, I hope you're jealous. Now, we got around to turn around, but no, to me, it's part of the fabric of A&M sports, Aggie sports, baseball, all the traditions, not just at this campus, but, you know, in this ballpark. And, Paul, I pinch myself every time I do a game, whether it's Kyle Reed here at Bluebell, to be a part of this. I never take this for granted. I love the atmosphere. I love game days. I love the prep. I love seeing stadiums, arenas, you know, field houses. And it's just such a special part to be in the Southeastern Conference.
Andrew, I'm curious about the NBA because I know you did work in Orlando and you were part of championships in San Antonio. That's such a long season, but those are two very passionate NBA towns. I know there's no comparison between college and the NBA, but what's it like to be part of something that lasts as long as that NBA season does, especially when you win the title?
What I got to learn under Greg Popovich was you watch how a team gets better and peaks for the playoffs, and that's when it really matters. And then the first time I was in San Antonio, so I was in Orlando when it was born, when the Magic were born, to be a part of that in an expansion. Now, yes, there were a lot of losses in that, but it was special to be a part of that. Then to go to San Antonio, where the Spurs are part of the fabric of that city. So when the playoffs came and it merges with Fiesta, you have Spurs flags. It is close to college that way, the way the town embraces the Spurs for that playoff run. But I really learned from Pop that it was about the Spurs, not always about the opponent. And to watch a team get better and to be ready to make that challenge. And you sometimes take for granted that their championship window it didn't close for the longest time. And that kind of excellence, you don't want to take it for granted, but you certainly learn to appreciate, you know, the great players. So very fortunate. And two fantastic organizations, Paul. I can't say enough. They were wonderful as a young broadcaster with Orlando and have the choices there, and then to go with the San Antonio Spurs and be in a special city like that, truly blessed. And then to come here to Texas A&M, someone's smiling down on me, that's for sure.
Yeah, I happened to be in Orlando not long after that franchise launched, and to get a ticket was almost impossible. I mean, I realized you were doing the games, but it was I went to a few games. It was an amazing experience. So let me close by talking a little bit about Jimbo, because it's been such an extraordinary thing to watch. But this year it was so close. What has been your view of just seeing this program literally explode?
Yeah, you see the culture that he has instilled, implemented, and Paul, what gets me is these aren't his guys, but they bought in. And I think that says a lot about Jimbo. And, you know, it's funny, trying to come up with a description for him and talking with Aggie fans, and he just fits as an Aggie with the core values that are here at A&M. And the word genuine comes to mind. He's genuine. And you talk to the players, and his, you know, he doesn't skip steps to success. You have to do it this way. And I'm not saying they took some lumps, but it wasn't going to happen overnight. But when you keep doing the same things, and when you learn that the preparation for Saturday becomes more important than what you actually do on that Saturday, and when you learn to prepare, and when the leaders lead, and, you know, players recruit players, and you have to bring in the right players who know that it's for the program and not for themselves. You know, everything that he has, the vision, I think, is now coming through along the lines of a successful season, the win over Florida changed them from an underdog to a favorite, and to be able to be in that favorite role throughout this season, where now teams are kind of circling A&M on that schedule the same way everybody else circles Alabama and what Nick Saban has done for years. But Jimbo embraces the expectations changing, and you know you still have to go to work and to see the recruits coming in, and they were upset that the Aggies weren't in the college football playoff, and they feel like they new guys haven't even a snap, and they've got a chip on their shoulder. I think he's got the right guys, and I'm going to say this, Paul. I think he's the right guy at the right time for Texas A&M, and he has built this team into an SEC with his offensive line, with his defensive line, the skill and the depth that he has on both sides of the football.
Andrew Monaco, the voice of the Aggies. I know you got a game. We won't keep you, but thanks for coming by. I hope you'll come back. This was really fun for all of us.
Paul, I would love to. Thank you again. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Andrew. Our pleasure. We are heading to the break, and look forward to talking to more of you at 855-242-7285. There is now a call out of Kansas City for the firing of Les Miles by the local newspaper, and also Jeff Long, the embattled athletic director. Remember, he was at Arkansas. Clemson has just announced it will allow full capacity at Death Valley. We'll talk about both of those stories when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
We are back. Another hour to go, and more of your calls in the final hour. A couple of guests as well. We'll talk to one more broadcaster from Ole Miss, and then Brooks Cabine at the bottom of the hour on the latest allegations out of LSU. I mentioned going to the break. There are now calls for not only Les Miles firing, but Jeff Long, who has obviously made an absolute mess out of that athletic department, the former athletic director at Arkansas. He was fired there for Hunter Yurecek, and I think everyone knows how well that worked out. And Clemson announcing it will allow full capacity. That is pretty much going to be the norm now. Oklahoma announced it earlier today. Alabama took the lead two or three days ago. Let's grab some more calls. Cotton is in Charleston, and you are on the air. Hello, Cotton.
It's Colton, but Cotton's kind of funny, you know. But
hey, well, good. Colton, hey, I missed the L, but glad you're on.
All good. So was actually calling about what you just spoke about. It's good to hear that that teams are shooting for full capacity. Is that wishful thinking, or is that serious right now? I hope it's serious.
I think right now it is not wishful thinking. Now, the only thing that could change this, and I don't want to sound like Anthony Fauci here, but if for whatever reason our extreme desire to get back to normal blows up in our face. I think the odds of it are not that are not the same as last year, because you know the vaccination part of the equation is significant.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we hope so. Does that mean tailgating too?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you tell folks they can have an entire stadium full and not allow tailgating. Now, that's just my opinion, but I'm going to say tailgating is going to be back.
I agree. That sounds good. I'll end on a good note. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, it is. I would say as we turn the corner toward next week. And you start hearing all the what happened on this day a year ago. We are moving in a very positive direction, and I'll leave the I'll leave all the doomsdaying for others. But I think you have to feel really good about where we are, and hopefully we progress throughout the summer. So here we are. We're 3 hours in. More of your calls in a moment, and a couple of guests as well as. The Les Miles story, for whatever reason, is the dominant story of the day because it's so ridiculous. More of your calls after this.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.